sick of this shit. Putting on ass, putting on ass. Sick of this shit, sick of this shit, sick of this shit.
I'm just trying to be a new person. When I flick back and need progression, I need something more for satisfaction. I want the other side aside. What the silence? I wanna do my work or keep a streak, or wait for things to come to me. Skip the milk, skip the sleep. My trust in me, my trust in me. But you're putting on ass, putting on ass. Sick of this shit, sick of this shit. Putting on ass, putting on ass. Sick of this shit, sick of this shit. Putting on ass, putting on ass. Sick of this shit, sick of this shit. Putting on ass, putting on ass.
Sick of this shit, sick of this shit, sick of this shit.
Controlled somehow. You got new friends by now. Well, I cut mine off when I was with you. Sometimes friendship ain't going nowhere. You get jealous and I feel blue. But baby, I need you. This is something that we can't repair. Careful steps since you left me here. If you wanted me, you would wanna be free. We just had a long fight. As friends, I'm still hurting.
Please stop calling me on my phone.
Feels like we're earthwalking up on the moon, right? So wrong and so beautiful. Oh, so wrong and so beautiful. This is something that we can't repair. Careful steps since you left me here. I swear, if you were me, you would wanna be free.
City like six deep in a hatchback. Jiggy was the mission, but niggas ain't hit his backpack. I don't really know what to say. Could you scratch that?
It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness. That is life.
Don't be in the club trying to flex to this. Don't you hit your little two-step to this. I think it's a dub or the extra shit. How you want more, but got less to give. We all pressed to live proper. Even though the money outside don't change, we press to live proper. Even though the vertigo makes you strange.
Yeah. Bounce with it, bounce with it, bounce with it, start touting the things that you say that you not. Bounce with it, bounce with it, bounce with it, rock. Popping these pills when you get in a hard place. Bounce with it, bounce with it, bounce with it, start touting the things that you say that you not. Bounce with it, bounce with it, bounce with it, rock. Popping these pills when you get in a hard place.
Yeah, I probably pass this merch at the Goodwill. The guild and make a good deal, but good feel pricey. You hype beats the type to make my move real. I feel useless, like CBD in the valley. Dispensary flood peripheral. Cabernet in my glasses, the syllable in the masses. My word is more than celebrity. What is niggas telling me? I dropped out of college and then I went stupid. I dropped out the old hook, the new one go stupid. I dropped out this whole verse, the 16 was useless. I dropped my own version, my name isn't Kubrick.
I'm in the cloud trying to flex to this. Smoke you with your little two-step to this. I think it's a dub, but it ain't your shit. How you want more, but got less to give. We all press to live proper. Even though the money outside don't change, we press to live proper.
I can two-step, who stepped on the silhouette of eagles like we do? Pop my collar like my brown liquor, the same color as my people. Peer pressure made us follow all the trending topics. I'm a college dropout too, yeah, they should've called us. Verses sponsored by versions of me as a scholar. Shipping my ass off to school was a promise, but I ain't plan on staying. I said I'ma be an artist. I touched those stages, test my pen two pages. A tour on my own that a label should be paying, but I bet on me and kept my shit low-key so niggas can't kill my dreams. Self-doubt came in forms of a human being. Niggas stay in places, think that's places you should be. I'ma do my own thing, see where that takes me. Proper vertigo from looking down on my dreams. So I
don't trying to flex to this. Don't you with your little two-step to this. I think it's a dog, but an extra shit. How you want more, but got less to give. We all press to live proper. Even though the money outside don't change, we press to live proper. Even though the vertigo makes shit strange, we press to live.
It's like meditation. Counting that cake up right in my basement. Count it again cause I'm hella faded. Count it up, count it. Had to count it again cause I'm hella faded. Why your hoe on my ear saying I'm the greatest? Taking trips out of state, I can't get complacent. Shorty counting on me, there ain't no replacement. I just smoke me a wood and do no complaining. Cause I'm on the block of my off-white. Stepped on the scene like I'm all might. Get to the guard, dog, it's alright. Made a few bands on the off night. My diamonds be shining with no light. My dope not get wide, it's no close fight. Earth, earth, earth. Rolling woods by the dozen. Yeah, the
ops, bitch. Used to post up on the blog, oh, just me and all my vatos. Was slaving for that plateau. Don't speak, I keep my.
You're listening to CKUT 91.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. It is Monday, May 6, 2024, and this is On Things McGill. We are broadcasting live from the studio, only a couple of steps away from the lower field of McGill's downtown campus. That is where the pro-Palestinian encampment that was established by a group of students more than a week ago is now, and that is following actions, similar actions at other universities worldwide. More than showing support to the Palestinian people, this encampment aims at beginning to cut ties with universities, corporation, and other institutions that are that contribute and profit of the current genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza. This is All Things McGill. We're going to sum up what's going on over there. And we have an interview with other student journalists that will be coming up. But right now, let's do a little recap. This encampment has been going on for more than a week now, for 10 days. So that's it's a good moment to, sit down, figure what's going on, what are demands again, and see how it's been going so far. So the protesters, they have two main demands. That is first, disclosure. So for McGill University to disclose its ties with Israeli institutions that are contributing or that have ties to the oppression of the Palestinian people in Gaza. And the second one is divestment. So for the university to divest from these companies and institutions. And as I just said, the encampment has been going on for more than a week, specifically 10 days. It was established the previous Saturday. And it has become a highly organized little community with people caring for each other. There's a food tent that's been running on contributions from the McGill and Montreal community. And the whole operation has been very peaceful. So I would definitely encourage anyone to come down on campus and check it out for themselves. CKUT has been on site since pretty much the beginning, and we've seen and covered what's been going on, from speeches, teach-ins, workshops, and film projections. Today, I guess the main event is going to be the press conference that's going to be held by SPHR and IJV and other faculty, I think. And it's happening at 3 p.m., we CKUT should definitely be there to cover that, and we aim on talking about it on our show tonight at 5 p.m. And now to talk a little about McGill University's response. It first denounced this encampment as illegal and asked for the protesters to dismantle and leave campus. And then an injunction for the camp to be moved was presented by two students. This injunction was denied by a judge, arguing that the camp did not impede access to campus and was not a threat to security concerning the peaceful nature of the protest, and more importantly, that these protesters have a right to free speech. And so, yeah, and since then, McGill University, specifically through, like, the emails that the community has received from the President Deep Saini, has been a bit more toned down. Friday, the last update that we got was Friday, and it was not necessarily asking for protesters to leave. It was thanking everyone for their patience and highlighting the role of the SPVM. And yeah, so it was kind of a shift in tone, which was surprising to see. Yeah, but we are still, I guess, awaiting to see what's going to happen in the next few days and weeks, considering that we are getting closer to convocation ceremonies that usually take place on this very same field that the encampment currently is settled at. So we'll see what McGill plans to do, because if they find an agreement by then, or if we see a bit more of an escalation between the two parties. That's the main facts for now. We will take another music break, and we will hear this this interview by our student journalists.
Mais il ne peut pas se voir lui. Alors, est-ce qu'il existe vraiment? Est-ce que j'existe vraiment?
Je ne sais pas trop pourquoi, mais souvent j'espère me lever un matin sur une autre sphère. J'ai tout à portée de bras et pourtant j'essaye toujours de rajouter des nuages dans le ciel. Le temps est gris pâle, le soleil à la crève, je crois que c'est vital. Besoin de tristesse dans la tête, vos paysages par la fenêtre de la ligne 13. Ça me réjouit de croiser tous ces regards pleins de détresse. Gris pâle, ça se voit que sa vie est cool, observant le temps qui s'écoule dans cet open space. Un boss tout aussi cool qu'a suivi un peu plus de cours, donc faut bien lui lécher les boules pour conserver sa petite chaise. Et mes écrits parlent d'eux-mêmes, ce monde n'est pas mon domaine. Juste un gamin paumé qui essaye de faire ressortir ses promesses. Gris pâle, le soleil à la crève, je vais ressortir les problèmes. J'avance toujours en noircissant le ciel. Je ne sais pas trop pourquoi, mais souvent j'espère me lever un matin sur une autre sphère. J'ai tout à portée de bras et pourtant j'essaye toujours de rajouter des nuages dans le ciel. Je ne sais pas trop pourquoi, mais souvent j'espère me lever un matin sur une autre sphère. J'ai tout à portée de bras et pourtant j'essaye toujours de rajouter des nuages dans le ciel. Je vois le soleil dans le miroir, ranger les doutes au fond d'un tiroir. Je suis sûr que ce n'est plus un mirage. J'accoste bientôt sur le rivage, les rayons inondent mon visage. Je n'avais jamais vu ces paysages. Ce monde est beau, tout est si clair. Je tombe amoureux en un éclair. Éloignez-moi des ténèbres, je veux plus jamais voir les larmes. S'il y a pas de sourire sur mes lèvres, je serai mieux dans l'au-delà. Je serai mieux dans l'au-delà. Laissez-moi dans l'au-delà. Laissez-moi dans l'au-delà. Le soleil dans le miroir.
lie to you now.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. What you just heard was Overthinking by Kellyanne, and as always, the whole playlist will be on our website. Yeah, as promised, we are going to listen to the interview that was made 2 days ago. Yesterday, actually. Yes? No? 2 days ago. By our student journalist at CKUT and the Tribune. Yeah, let's hear that right now.
Can you hear me as well?
Yeah, probably.
So, CKUT, 90. Are you actually recording?
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to start it?
No, you should.
Really?
Okay.
Hello, everyone. This is Ghazal from CKUT Radio 90.3 FM. We are here today with three former editor-in-chiefs of McGill's student publication, The Tribune. Sequoia, introduce yourself.
Hello, hello. I'm also here at the encampment, just kind of hanging out with CKUT. We've been on and off live. But yeah, we just so incidentally happen to have three generations of editors-in-chiefs here. So yeah, anyways, I'm Sequoia. Yes, sorry. It is Saturday, May 4th. No Star Wars references. yeah, anyway, so yeah, May 4th. It is about 2:20 in the afternoon.
They have a mic. All right, Madison, your turn.
I'm Madison. I came after Sequoia as the Tribune's editor-in-chief. And, yeah, we're hanging out by the encampment, ready to talk about, you know, student journalism and how it relates to activism and on-campus solidarity activities.
My name is Matthew Molinaro. I am outgoing editor-in-chief of the Tribune. First one to spend a full year after our name change. Excited to be here. Excited to talk about the encampment. Day 8, so they're going strong. Morale is still high. Yeah, looking forward to this discussion.
Well, I'll ask a question that I think Matthew's been interviewed a lot by mainstream media journalists. And you're almost like acting as like an unpaid reporter because like they're just like asking you for updates. But you've been here for like pretty much, you've been here every day,
every
right?
Every day I've been here, yeah.
How has it been kind of like being here and seeing it evolve and also like being like a liaison for kind of like mainstream media who just kind of drops in like whenever.
Yeah.
How has it been?
It's been interesting, for sure. That's not a very expressive word, but I'll say, you know, I'm one of the few who's named, who goes on with their face to discuss the encampment. I recognize the privilege and responsibility that that entails as a student journalist. I think for me, what's been fascinating is kind of working in between the two, because I have so many connections within the encampment and also within the protests. So I've had really firsthand accounts, even if it's not reportage. And there's kind of been an ethical question of how much you tell, right? Or even as a reporter in news coverage, it's like, how do you actually speak to like the beauty of this movement and the hope and the despair and the kind of effective contours of this movement? I've tried to ensure that like I'm instilling like really on the ground reporting to them. as much as I can. I think I've also tried to kind of interrupt some of the narratives that I've seen, because they're just not true when you're on the ground. We've seen repeatedly this kind of outsider narrative. I've been asked every single time, you know, what is the composition? And it's students. It's students, and it's the McGill and Concordia community. It's people who have been around universities, and I think that's really important. It's been fascinating. I haven't always been called, right? I haven't always been on the air, but I appreciate the opportunity to speak to them however I can and ensure that, you know, the voice of student journalism, which has always been more radical and more progressive, ensuring that I'm leading with the principles of anti-oppression and decoloniality that isn't often reflected in mainstream media. That's what I've tried. Has it been successful? We'll see. Jury's still out.
I do have another question, actually. What do you guys, like, from what you've kind of been following, just, like, with the news media in Montreal, yeah, but also, like, I guess across Canada, like, how do you feel about the narrative that, like, yeah, is there a narrative? Like, yeah, what have you been, like, noticing? Open floor.
I can start. What I was going to say, too, is something that's been really critical for me is I've been on the ground for, you know, I've been a reporter at McGill for 4 years, and there's a historical context, I think, to this encampment that isn't always reflected, right? Mm. This encampment didn't pop out of nothing,
yeah,
right?
There
was a vote for the policy against genocide in Palestine that passed with 78.7% of the vote that has all of the demands of divestment, disclosure, defending students, yeah, as well. And I think not recognizing that dehistoricizes this movement.
That's such a good point.
Yeah, and also, like, the policy against genocide in Palestine happens a year and a half after the Palestine Solidarity Policy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also just the blockades, right? We saw the Bronfman blockade. We've seen how increasing police presence has affected the mm-hmm. protests. I think that's something important, but that's something you only get from student journalism, right? Someone
yes.
who's willing to kind of bridge these movements and the practices of this movement together, that's something that's been really critical to me as I've kind of tried to deconstruct mm. the media narrative. Yeah,
that's such an important point. And I think that some of the bigger outlets, such as, not to critique that much, but the Globe and Mail, the National Post,
yeah. Yeah.
maybe some of the outlets that speak to more national issues are glossing over the
yeah.
historical points specifically
yeah.
from McGill. It's like, why did this encampment
yeah.
start
yeah.
at McGill
yeah.
first? Why was McGill
yeah.
the first
yeah.
one to have an indefinite encampment in support of Palestine
yeah.
and
yeah,
in support
true.
Of divestment?
Yeah.
Is it because this place isn't, what, an analog to Columbia University, say? Or is it because there is so much lore
yeah.
when it comes to
yes.
Legislation that
yeah.
students have tried to pass and that the administration has repeatedly suppressed?
Yeah.
And I think it just speaks to the incredible efforts of so many student groups
mm.
on campus and how resilient they are, too, in
yeah.
the face of being told no
so
repeatedly, of being told
numerous lawsuits,
yeah.
numerous like
lawsuits,
SPHR,
the injunction,
the danger,
mm. yeah.
the precarity of being not sure if you're going to be able to continue your
yeah,
activism
literally.
Or your journalism
yeah.
because of legal action.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we've seen, you know, yeah, but we've seen several kind of lawsuits come out, whether
yeah.
and like trying the injunction with students trying to get this dismantled and
yeah.
like it. Yeah, I think that like the the media narrative that comes out of student journalism versus the mainstream is so important. But I've also been kind of impressed with some of the more local reporters
yeah.
As this has gone on. Maybe not on day one, I would say, that they'd be telling the whole story. But as the week has gone on.
We've just had someone
yeah.
come by and offer us food. So we're just going to take a second and accept it. What is this?
So much.
What is this?
Yeah, what is that?
Thank you.
Cookies.
Oh my
oh.
god. We're giving cookies to everyone who's staying here for the cause.
Woo!
Thank you.
Oh, and it looks so good. The packaging is so cute. It has like a nice little sun sticker on mine. Yours has a bike sticker. Oh my god, a watermelon. Ooh, those pancakes are looking delicious.
I also have a watermelon.
Two watermelons. Very appropriate
yeah.
for the cause.
We see this a lot, just like random people coming in with like stuff. It's just cool. It's really cool. There's always like a lot of community support.
Yeah.
The kindness is unparalleled here.
So, yeah, going off of that, how have you been feeling? Like, what are some of the emotions or thoughts that are running through your head the days that you're coming by the encampment? How has that
yeah.
been?
I mean, I've come every day. I think it's, at first, really those early days when we weren't exactly sure what would happen and the presence of the police, I think, loomed over us. There was both a mixture of fear and excitement and also hope for what the future of this university looks like. With every single day, I have only been solidified by the fact that the networks of care and compassion and mutual aid and...
One second, just having a tech thing.
Technical difficulties?
Yeah, it's off.
It has to be green, so just keep an eye for that.
Hold on. Okay. Maybe keep your thumb off, like away from the button. Okay, wait,
hello? No, oh, we're back on.
Oh, when that's it's on orange, mute. It's mute. Yeah. It needs to be green. Hold it. Oh, it's just low on battery. We need to change it.
Can we use mine?
Yeah.
Maybe share.
Hello. We will share.
Right, so you were saying excitement and hope in the first few days
excitement,
and then police
hope.
Presence.
I'd say what really fortifies me is that the networks of care, compassion, generosity towards one another, the mutual aid and community that we've seen won't leave after the encampment, after I think the demands are met. Like, this is going to change the face of
future
activism.
Continuity as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's been something that's really grounding, just as we continue to see the police reiterate that this is a peaceful, nonviolent protest. Seeing that was different than the first few days when you're just not sure.
Yeah.
But I've been impressed by the organizers' creativity, but also their resilience, as Madison was saying.
And also just a level of organization here at the encampment.
Impressive.
Everything is so structured and Madison, how many days have you come by? Is this your first day, second day? What's going on?
My second day.
Were you here before the counter protest as well, or
I was here before the counter protest.
Okay. Now, as someone who came here twice, once before, once after, have you noticed any shifts in dynamics, or just how it's been feeling? You know, do you think maybe before the counter protest, the excitement that Matthew was talking about, or the fears and kind of the tension was higher, and now after the counter protest and seeing police presence kind of die down, it's been less tense? I don't know.
That's
have
an
you
interesting
been,
point. Yeah. I think I would agree with Matthew that there was a palpable sense of excitement and hope at the beginning. And I would say it's still here.
Yeah.
But it's also gotten more organized
it totally
in
has,
operation.
Yeah.
And I'm so impressed. And I think the feeling I get more is pride now.
No, totally.
Just because how much everyone's helping each other out. Nobody's causing, as far as I can see, everyone's just trying to give everyone else a leg up here. There are kittens to my left that are being brought in as emotional support for the people here who have been in, day out, until their voices are raw and sleeping outside, just putting themselves through, literally anything to show their support and their soutien. And I wouldn't say necessarily that counter protest has dampened morale or anything. I don't think so at all. And I haven't seen any heckling, at least today. I know it's a bit quieter today. So it could be that, but everyone here seems happy to be around and hopeful.
You know, something that I feel is a very under-recognized part of activism is actually capacity building and a lot of the reproductive labor that goes on. It is important to do direct action and to have a protest in the street, but also you have to be able, people have to be fed, people have to be well slept, people have to you have to have a sustained energy. And I feel like that's something people are doing really, really well here. And then I just wanted to go back to a way earlier point actually about kind of how mainstream media is glossing a lot of and almost giving this ahistorical kind of this just popped up kind of thing. And I mean, you have to wonder, is it mainstream media's place to be doing those kind of deep dives? And is this a niche that's kind of has to be filled by independent media or by student journalism? What's the role of, I guess, because I mean, you've been here, Tribune people, CKUT people, The Breach Media, Savannah Craig with CUTV, there's people who are, really, actually on the ground here, and, again, kind of blurring the line between, kind of participant and journalist in some way, sometimes. What do you think is, the role of media, of student journalism. And, like, I know we've talked so much about, like, you know, the role that student media plays in these kind of big campus events, not just, like, with the encampment, because we've had this conversation, right, and we all know the flaws. Student journalism is very flawed. We do not have the resources. We do not have a lot of the training. McGill doesn't have a journalism program, but what is the purpose of, what is the strength of, like, campus media that, like, mainstream media journalists do not have access to, I guess?
Journalism's only vocal when it's local.
That was the name of an editorial we ran last year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it was specifically speaking to the gutting and the layoffs at local media outlets. Specifically, it was the Montreal Gazette that we were referring to at the time, and how taking away local coverage really dilutes stories and simplifies them and reduces them in this way that's it's not helpful to the communities who are reading them and trying to understand an issue that's going on where they live. I think diluting is almost a good way to put it. And to speak to your point, Sequoia, I think that the purpose of mainstream media, I think a lot of them would say it would be to bear witness. And I say yeah, for sure, but I would also argue that it's their job to provide context to the witness bearing.
So it doesn't come across as reactionary, you know?
Exactly, right?
No, that's what it is right now. Mm-hmm. It is reactionary, extremely.
This?
Like as close to you.
As close as possible? Thank you. I think the reactionary angle is easy to get hits. You know,
true.
Obviously, you know, CBC is like state funded.
Business model.
But the business model is really important because so many local outlets are trying to stay alive. And you know what? A lot of local outlets and national ones are getting huge traffic on these protest stories right now.
Yeah.
It's a hot topic. Yeah. Who has the newest information about where the encampments are cropping up, whether the police are going to come in, how the students are doing, if their demands are being met. People are actually following this, and I feel like, for example, the Gazette has been doing some pretty solid reporting, and, like, they've been getting huge hits on these stories, as far as I can tell, from their website. So it's really interesting to balance, you know, what does the public need to know, according to the editors, and what do they want to lead with as the kind of catchiest part, what's our hook here, even when you're trying to be neutral and you're trying to be quote-unquote unbiased, which has its own sorts of problems because you can't really be unbiased. Sensationalizing. It's so true.
I was just going to say, too, to the point of the CBC, I was at a teach-in yesterday, and someone described local protests, the responsibilities of having local resonance and global relevance. And I think I want to bring this in because I think for CBC as well, something that I expect, and at least the most basic understanding of human to human, is the fact that your colleagues in Gaza are being murdered right now. The work of Palestinian journalists like Bisan and Motaz right now is at an extremely, it's so strong. It's grounded in the region. And I think there needs to be more of an acknowledgement of what journalism does in times of crisis, how it brings voice and brings light to the desecration of land and people that's going on. And I think these larger media outlets have that responsibility because ultimately this encampment is about Gaza. And I think taking it away from that or taking it too specifically to the students is something that I've seen time and time again. And I need to stop because if you talk to the students, their focus is on Gaza. Their focus is not on themselves. Their focus is not self-serving themselves. This is not just about, you know, activism to get points. No, this is grounded, disciplined activism.
And you know what? To your point about that, it's disappointing to see a lot of, again, because of the business model, we see a lot of journalists basically waiting with bated breath until the police start aggressing people.
Yeah.
Like, you know that's what they're all waiting for, right? Yeah. Like, they're kind of like, they're not here
they
because they...
telling us that.
Yeah, that's been
reiterated. Right? Like, they're not here to, like, follow the developments, like, of this encampment. They're not here to, like, ask whether McGill has been engaging with the demands. Like, there's no... They don't care about that. Yeah. It's like, they need... They want something to happen, you know? Like, they need something actionable, and it's...
Yeah.
It's too bad, yeah. you know? So I think they're missing out a lot of that just yeah. because they're like, I don't know. It's like they need something to
raid in and they'll have this like breaking news to have on their shows. But it's like, well, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, well, come down here. Actually try to like capture the vibe, success. Capture like the spirit and the goal that's like they're trying to achieve.
Yeah. It's like, and you could learn something, right? This is all about popular education. It means learning on the job
that's
as a journalist,
point.
Right? Yeah. I think something I also wanted to add that I haven't necessarily seen, because the way mainstream media, and I really do understand it from an extractive point of view, they have mostly stayed...
From an extractive point of view.
They've mostly stayed to the edges of the protests and the encampment. But when you're at the edges, you don't actually see what's happening really at the center. And I wanted to shout out, too, those moments of improvisation and clarity when people come together to co-create change. When we see people learning from one another, we've seen the translation from Arabic into English into French, like the kind of vibrancy of the languages as well. This is something that kind of completely gets thrown into larger discussions of fears, of discrimination, of fears of violence, that if you actually went into the protests, you'd see how they're navigating harm, they're navigating fear, they're navigating building safety for themselves, but also in context with Gaza. Yeah.
That's a really good point. And just kind of like immersing yourself in some of just the activities that are going on.
Yeah.
Like being here with CKUT the past week and just staying here, even if we weren't broadcasting for the whole time, just to see what's going on has been so nice. Like talking to the people who are organizing the food just casually, not because we wanted a quote or because we wanted like a story out of it. Or just people who are like setting up, painting stations or sewing kits.
I was doing embroidery this morning. It was really fun.
Yeah, and just seeing how that kind of like developed out of the counter protest, for example. I was speaking with someone who's an art history graduate student at Concordia, and they had started the embroidery, and they've started like a care tent inside to make sure people are checking in, and then
that's
we have
fantastic.
Emotional support kittens, and you kind of don't get that progression if you haven't been here and haven't been checking in on the different camps.
Exactly.
Kind of blanking on other questions right now.
Did we want to talk a bit about student journalism and our own relationship?
Well, I wanted to like kind of bring the conversation back to the editorial you did on the link and just kind of talk about how like student journalism in that sense is also really important, because how that story was portrayed, and you can speak more to this, was portrayed by mainstream media is very different than how the link did the coverage.
And if you want to just give some context for that, Matthew?
So I was on the ground that day. I believe it was in November. There was a keffiyeh sale happening in the Hall building. The Hall building is a historic site of activism for Concordia University. On the ninth floor of the Concordia of the Hall building, that is where Black students and Caribbean students occupied against a racist professor. This is a site of activism. So to see it, you know, so many years later, for sales of keffiyehs, that was something I think organizers were really working towards. All to say, there was a hectic period because Israeli and Zionist protesters were coming in to do sales as well. And it got quite tense later in the day. I was only there in the morning. And they were the Israeli protesters were taunting the Palestinian organizers around. They repeatedly misgendered one of the organizers, one of the people doing a sale. The person used the C word, C-U-N-T, see you next Tuesday, which was taken to mean an anti-Semitic slur. Mm.
And there was like a video, right?
There was a video of it.
But it was very like loud and chaotic and stuff.
And
so.
In the reporting that was done by the link, the organizer repeated that they did not know what that slur even meant. They did not even know it existed. They were just cursing at them for being misgendered. So we saw that reporting happen on the ground. I mean, it was incredibly effective. It deconstructed the narratives, I think, really around anti-Semitism that were happening. That just wasn't true and doesn't bring to light kind of the interactions that can be quite hostile, right? How do we move forward the harm of, you know, someone misgendering someone and someone bursting out in a way that isn't necessarily respectable, right? So that was incredibly effective, and it was done on the ground day of, and it continued for multiple days. So shout out to the link for that kind of reporting, and it shows also what happens when you have the infrastructure for a journalism program.
Absolutely.
Kind of the strength of reporters at the link. Yeah. So that was kind of the context behind it. Yeah.
I don't remember what my question was.
Yeah, me, sorry. I was like...
Maybe it'll come back to me. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm blanking.
I'm trying to think if we want to talk Tribune or no.
Yeah,
well,
if you
maybe
want.
We can like shift focus to your year, Sequoia.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe we no, you're good. But I think like even if it's like in the middle of us, you can still hear. But kind of asking you more about how it was your year when the divest occupation of the arts building happened against fossil fuels, and then it was the Palestine solidarity policy that year too, and how like you navigated that year, and then like passing it like chronologically to Madison and then Matthew.
I'm so embarrassed to say this, but it feels like a really long time ago for me. And
that's
so a lot of my, like, a lot of the details of that year are really forgotten.
I can fill in blanks if you need.
Yeah, if you want to, that would be, that would be great. But I mean, the thing that I remember really, really clearly is being bogged down by a very, by a lawsuit, actually. Anyways, I can't really get into the details of it, but it really took up a lot of my energy, and it kind of had to do with, just like tensions, Israel,
political
tensions, really. And it's too bad because it really took away from, you know, the energy of our paper and our capacity to report on things. But, I do feel like our, because this was 2021, 2022, I felt like a lot of people, and if you guys can remind me of the exact context, I think there was a bunch of evictions that happened in Palestine, right? There was like, I can't remember what.
No, that was the 2021 before.
Oh, really?
That was May.
I can't quite remember, but all I remember was, actually, yeah, I think it did precede that. And there was like, I felt like that was a moment that woke a lot of people up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was a very, like, at least for, like, a lot of university students in Canada, for example. Like,
for sure.
And so I feel like that kind of informed some of the context and, like, some of our, you know, ability to have an editorial, having editorial discussions and coverage of that. And so, yeah, you kind of have to, like, give credit to kind of the consciousness raising, I think, that happened in, like, a very serious way. So that kind of started the Tribune kind of being a lot more open about our stance and being like, I don't know, brave enough to kind of go against a lot of the mainstream rhetoric, which felt really suffocating at the time. You know, as a journalist, you're like, oh, are we going to like get in trouble or whatever? But I think that's really like changing. So anyways, if you want to add something, Madison.
Yeah, I think that Sequoia's year was a sea change for the Tribune, because the year before I was a science editor, and I remember Israel-Palestine issues on campus. It was during the pandemic as well, so I would say that there was a little bit less physical in-person activism going on and organizing. There was
a lot of webinars.
And it was kind of a taboo subject when it came to opinion editorializing. And I understood why the management had taken that tack previously, because, of course, it ignites a firestorm, right? Of course, it divides people along a political spectrum. And the Tribune didn't have an anti-oppressive mandate that specifically said, we stand for anti-colonialism here. We stand for kind of justice in that way. So it was really up to the editorial board that made up that specific year to decide what stances they wanted to take and what issues they wanted to tackle.
And historically, the Tribune hasn't been the most progressive outlet on campus.
No, not at all.
The Tribune used to be the conservative paper. And
so
I mean, even, like, you know, we host an annual journalist conference. And, you know, we'd often, like, ask alums to come. And they'd be like, oh, the Tribune? Like, no. But I'm like, it's a different paper.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to see, like, over kind of the past few decades, like, how, like, it's really, really shifted. But it used to be, like, a very conservative paper.
Yeah. And I just want to make a last point about what taking a stance. For example, the editorial we did, it was for the joke issue week, which is really funny. But it was the Palestine Solidarity Policy Must Stand. And it was basically for the first time that our editorial board took a definite stance on McGill meeting.
You thought we were progressive psych. Oh, sorry, conservative psych.
McGill meeting to divest from Israeli interests, for example, and from anything supporting the illegal occupation of Palestine. And immediately, kind of after that happened, we started to understand what the consequences of taking that stance were as a student group that doesn't have the backing of a journalism school, right? We were bombarded with emails, calls, even depending on who you were. I know I got calls as an editor-in-chief the following year. From pro-Israel groups, media watchdogs, yeah, such as Honest Reporting Canada, and angry emails and messages telling us that we were anti-Semitic, yeah, telling us that our stance was horrific and that it was evil, even.
Or that the journalism you were doing was not good, yeah, unbiased, exactly, objective journalism.
Exactly. Yeah. Attacking the very nature of
integrity
us expressing
of the
our
paper,
opinion.
Yep.
And I think it was difficult for a lot of the people managing, you know, I was managing editor. I know Sequoia had to deal with a lot of flack, but dealing with that kind of backlash made the paper stronger. And I think made the paper ready to take on some of the bigger challenges that it was going to face in the next couple of years. And that continued in terms of taking a pro-Palestinian stance and receiving backlash for it. It continued through the reporting on the Mohawk mothers and trying to fight McGill in court and how hard McGill was pushing back on that,
yeah,
and dealing with other lawsuits and, you know, stuff like that. Dealing with backlash is part of being a journalist, and it's incredibly scary, especially when you're alone, when you're a freelancer, when you're a student, when you don't have money in the coffers. And I feel like, yeah, leaving the paper and handing it over to Matthew, I had so much confidence because of what you had seen, yeah, Sequoia and I go through, and what
you
went through
as well.
And
also with the name change, it was like a really nice transition, starting with first editorial in Palestine, mm-hmm, name change, anti-oppressive mandate. Sorry.
I want to mention one thing, too. Also, like, my predecessor, Helen, mm-hmm, I think that really mattered as well. Her year mattered a lot because,
true,
this was the year of Untold McGill. This was the year of George Floyd. And so there was, like, a big kind of movement. And Helen and the management team at the time, like, put together, I think, a very actionable kind of statement. And, mm-hmm, it genuinely did change the way we hire, the way we editorialize. Like, just, like, it really changed things in a quite, like, structural, like, maybe not structural, but, like, at least material way. So I do want to, like, give credit to even that. Again, it's interesting to see the progression of the paper. But
really,
sorry, I cut
table.
You off.
No.
Shout out Helen.
Yeah. Well, shout out Helen.
Helen.
But yeah, sorry, Madison, what were you saying?
Yeah, I think the name change is the perfect, yeah, example to kind of talk about. And it's so wild to think about that being a year ago right now, I would say, when we decided that, no, we were not going to continue to have the name of a slave owner on our newspaper. And we were not going to stand to venerate that every single time we published a piece under the guise of anti-oppression. And I think that we were so unified on it as an editorial board, and we were so strong in kind of our stance and our statement and the editorial we ran then, and it connects to everything that's going on right now. It,
yep,
connects,
yep,
to the decolonial struggle and the struggle to free Palestine and to get our institution to divest, mm-hmm, from companies that are actively killing people. And I think that, yeah, with sorry, distracted by the chanting, but without those building blocks that Sequoia mentioned, from,
yeah,
Helen putting out the statements and changes, from Sequoia being brave enough and gutsy enough to take a stance,
mm-hmm,
to us putting together the name change and making that happen, and Matthew leading the paper in an anti-oppressive mandate, actually releasing an anti-oppressive mandate that will guide the paper's coverage forever now,
yeah,
it's pretty damn impressive.
So true. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? I know you guys got to get going, so
yeah,
this can be the last.
No, I can talk a bit to the context of this year. So I came in after these two brilliant individuals and how they shaped me. But I also want to mention I came in from an activist background as well. I'm an organizer. I have a background in organizing. I did not do as much organizing as I would have liked this year. But I come in from Black Liberation organizing from when I was a teenager. And also at McGill, I was a vice president for the Black Students Network. So I came in then with that also guiding me as a journalist, and also with the history of progressive radical struggle in journalistic settings at this university, with the McGill Daily's Black Takeover that I reported on as well.
News feature.
Thank you. We Who Ran the McGill Daily, for anyone interested. But I came in knowing the impacts that would have. As someone who, you know, we editorialized multiple times on Palestine because this editorial board took place in the context of the genocide that happened after October 7th. I'd say to the anti-oppressive mandate, that was incredibly difficult because this was a transition year for the Tribune for sure. And as you can kind of tell, these last 3 years have been moving toward an anti-oppressive future at this paper, which meant there were struggles, right? There were struggles within this paper and from outside. I've been surveilled, harassed, threatened, doxxed because of my commitment to anti-oppression, my commitment to the people of Palestine.
Just having a spine.
Having a spine, having a moral compass, being grounded in your ethics, but also being grounded in your place in history. So that was something that was interesting to navigate. And certainly, you know, the buck stops here, so the buck falls with the editor-in-chief, but you have to be courageous. Otherwise, no one on your editorial board will be. No one will lead with that. And that will be difficult. And one thing that's really important in the line, in some of the lines of our anti-oppressive mandate, is being really sure about the way Black students, Indigenous students, students of color, and also specifically Palestinian and Arab students have moved this editorial board by advocating, by saying, this is not right. This is not okay. Because we can hear it from Honest Reporting. We can hear it from Zionist students. But we also need to be hearing it from Palestinian and Arab students who are affected by the violence of this institution, the administrative violence, but also the repeated misinterpretation of what they do. And as someone who works with language and works with words, I could not sit silent while the university was lying about Palestinian students. It was lying about SPHR McGill, and it was using their interpretation to exercise their power over SPHR, over Palestinian students, over Arab students, and over students with a conscience. Ultimately, journalism has to be fighting for that conscience, and that means fighting for an end to the genocide and for a better world.
All right, well, that feels like the perfect place to end it. I know you guys got to get going. It is 2:52. Thanks so much for coming on our podcast.
Thanks for having us on.
Anything else you want to say before we conclude?
Free Palestine.
Come support the encampment and see what it's like for yourself. Don't just assume.
Yep, absolutely. All right, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we are back. You're listening to CKUT 91.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. This was on Thanks McGill. It is 11:59, so right on time to pass it on to the next show. Thank you again to the Tribune and to the News Collective for the reporting that they do and for this great interview. That was really interesting to learn about the different evolutions of the newspaper. And yeah, we will keep covering the encampment. We should have a live show at 5 p.m., starting at 5 p.m. tonight, giving some more news about the encampment. And yeah, time to pass it on. So have a great week, everyone.
Quebec-raised singer Andrea Superstein is one of the most versatile voices in music today. The new album, Oh Mother, is an ambitious tour de force, highlighting her ever-growing creativity and sensitivity as a songwriter and arranger. Oh Mother is available now. Andrea will be performing at Upstairs Jazz Club in Montreal on Friday, May 3rd. For more information about the show, visit upstairsjazz.com.
We Groove Records and QCJA Productions presents Natural Mystic, a celebration of the music of Bob Marley. There's a natural mystic blowing through the air. Join us Saturday, June 8th at Le Ministère for a concert and after party with Dan Faya Beats, Juliet Nelson, and Sabu, all backed by the Gaia Band, with a special acoustic set by Wayne Tennant. Music by DJ Mas K, Boss Frecon, and DJ Big Worm. Doors open at 10 p.m. Showtime, 11:30 p.m. Join us at Le Ministère, 4521 Boulevard Saint-Laurent. Advance tickets are $25. Available at thepointofsale.com. They are more at the door. Natural Mystic, Saturday, June 8th at Le Ministère. A celebration.